For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I am your host, as always, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and Dynasty rankings over at SportsEthos.com. I actually haven't said this on any of the pods yet, but it'd be very appreciated if you wrote and left a review over on whatever podcast platform you listen to. I'm very interested in hearing your feedback, whether it be positive and you think I'm doing a great job, obviously that's great to hear, or if you think there's things I can improve on discussing these prospects or discussing players, risers, fallers during the regular season when we focus more on the NBA. I want to be receptive to it all and take that feedback in and know where I can improve. Or if you think I'm doing awesome, that's great too. Again, any ratings and reviews on whatever podcast platform you listen to would be much appreciated. With that being said, let's get back into the meat of the show, and that's, of course, more prospect scouting. As we're a little under a month away from the NBA draft, we're really going to ramp up and start forming our big boards and our dynasty big boards and really looking at, you know, where do we hope players land, what situations do we see for them, and what roles and skill sets they can bring to our fantasy teams. With that being said, let's dive into our first prospect today, Devin Carter, a junior out of Providence. He's definitely an older prospect with a draft age of a little over 22, but he's still been a bit of a late riser in the draft process. I think part of that stemmed from his combine, where he measured in a little over 6'2", so not really super tall. But we have to keep in mind these measurements with height are without shoes, so, you know, if you remember seeing heights from a couple years ago, they recently did change where they measure both NBA players and prospects without shoes, so heights might seem a little lower than we're used to. That being said, 6'2 is still a little on the short side. However, his wingspan measured nearly 6'9", so that's about a plus 7 there. That's really strong, and that length definitely shows up on the film, which we'll get into. He's about 195 pounds, so not super stocky, but he still looked pretty built out there. And getting into that length, I think that's what really has propelled a bit of his rise in his draft stock, just because of his defensive hard-nosed ability in play. And this might be a weird comparison to make right off the top, but he just reminds me in general of kind of a Miami Heat culture role player, in that he's plays really pesky, really annoying, doesn't make poor decisions often, and I think he just does a lot of things well and ticks a lot of boxes, both on court and for fantasy. And we'll be sure to get into all of that. But that's kind of my general impression of him, is just a good energy player, does a lot of smart things on the court, brings a lot of different skills to the court, and while it may not be at a high level, I think it's at a very valuable level. And that's obviously important for both Dynasty and on the court, and what NBA teams are looking for. Let's start with the offensive side. His handle is fairly steady, not necessarily explosive or flashy, but it's steady, and he has some dribble moves in there, namely some quick crossovers pair of a hesitation dribble, and he can do some things with the ball in his hands. I thought he also has some good poise when running the pick and roll, at least initially, and the pressure doesn't fluster him too much. He also has a pretty good recognition of finding cutters and rollmen in traffic. He had a 23.3 assist rate in his last season, and about 4.5 assists per 75 possessions. So, it's actually not a great number of assists. It's not super high, but it's still pretty solid, and that should definitely be a part of his game. However, getting into the lack of a ceiling on his self-creation game, and with his passing, his read progressions is pretty subpar, honestly. I kind of made the comparison in my mind to quarterbacks in football. You know, when they move their progressions, there's obviously the primary read, the first read, second read, third read. If that first read wasn't there, some quarterbacks then either dump it off or then struggle to progress through their reads. And I kind of saw a lot of that with Devin Carter, actually, where, you know, if he didn't see that bounce pass or didn't see a drive to the hoop, the position kind of stagnated a bit in that mid-range. Now, this may not matter as much if the usage is shifted downward, but it does speak to that lack of on-ball upside, and maybe he's not that player you want the ball in his hands every down, where, hey, if the play or the offense is stagnating a little bit, you can run a quick pick-and-roll action with him, but I'm not sure if I want him doing that all the time. In addition, he does lack this in-between game, very rarely pulled up for mid-rangers, and again, he gets a little lost if that first read isn't there, and the possessions would very easily stall out. You know, we're talking that 10 to 15 range from the basket. So, it's not to say he's bad at it, but there's definitely not, I think, this huge on-ball star here at all, which was asked of him at Providence. That being said, I think there's a lot of ways that he can downgrade his role into a smaller usage role and excel there. Again, talking about his passing a little bit, and again, I don't want to harp on this initial read stuff. I don't think he's going to be this huge on-ball option, but I thought his passing decisiveness was poor if that initial read wasn't there, and it does show up sometimes on the perimeter a little bit. It could be a function maybe of not great offensive talent at Providence and how much load was on him, but there was some hesitation sometimes in his willingness to move the ball around. Going back a little bit now with his shooting, he had some step-back pull-up looks, and the release was, I thought, fairly decent and quick. We'll get into the shot motion a little bit later. It's very funky. But he had some very deep pull-ups as well, where he just would pull up 5-7 feet behind the college arc, which is still very deep at the NBA level. He even had some relocation threes and some movement threes. We'll get into the shot in a little bit here and throw out some stats. I thought his shooting is at more of a capable level than you want to run stuff through him, but that still ticks the box, right? I'm still ticking the box where, yeah, I think he's going to provide some shooting. I don't think he's going to be elite shooting. I don't even think he'll be above average shooting, but can he shoot the ball? I think adequately, yes. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a contention point, I think, and a little polarizing for Carter of the question of how good of a shooter is he? He shot very well his junior year, but his shot accuracy before his junior year was actually pretty subpar. So to give some numbers there, in his junior year, he shot 38% from deep on 223 total attempts, which is pretty good. That's a good number of attempts and a good accuracy. However, over his full college career sample, he shot 34% from deep on 400 total attempts. He did shoot okay on pull-ups this past year, and, I mean, still, 400 attempts, 34%, it's not a knockdown shooter, but considering the junior year, players do improve their shooting over time. That's why I call him more of a dependable enough shooter than maybe one who's a pull-up knockdown one. To give the actual volume numbers here, per 75 possessions, he shot about 3 of 8.5 takes per game his junior year, which, that's good volume. And he was very aggressive shooting it. He looked like he almost wanted to prove that he could shoot the ball his junior year, and just did take some audacious attempts from deep, as I mentioned earlier. But I like seeing that. I like seeing that he believes in himself as a shooter and is confident of that, and was very willing to take the open shot or even the contested shot. So I like seeing that from him, and I'm definitely on the side that I think he will be able to shoot at the NBA level. It's just a question of how effective it will be, or if you even want to run plays through that. Talking a little bit more about his self-scoring game, when he got inside, I thought he was generally hesitant to attack and not really a great finisher. He has this kind of slow floater as well, which paired with that shorter height we mentioned earlier, does not work well. If you're already shorter than some of the big men you're trying to score against on the inside, and you have a slow release, you're giving the big man too much time to contest that shot. And there were definitely some ugly attempts where he just got swallowed up in trying to throw that floater up. Now, that all being said, he was 56% from two-point his junior year. But that was mainly at the rim. We talked about how there was a pretty big lack of mid-range attempts. And 56% from two, and if you're talking mainly at the rim, that's okay. That's probably a little under what we want to see. But he did get to the foul line a decent amount at 6.5 attempts per game. But he shot 72% overall in his college sample at the line. So, I mean, we have a decent sample of him being a little bit under what we want to see from the free throw line. That being said, getting to the line is good for scoring. That's good for points. And it is one of the better things you can do on the court. But is he going to be a positive free throw percentage shooter? Probably not. And then commenting back on his shooting numbers we saw earlier, that's probably where my biggest hesitancy with his shot would come from, is that free throw percentage being a little under what we want to see. Now again, it's still in the range where I think he's a dependable shooter, but that definitely, it's definitely why I don't see knockdown movement shooter outcomes for him, just because I don't think that inherent accuracy is there with him. In terms of his off-ball offense, I thought he's fairly active off-ball and was a willing mover, a willing cutter. And I just like seeing that. It speaks, I think, to his versatility on the offensive end. And, you know, we talked a good portion how I don't think he's his primary on-ball option that you want too often. You want it more in a pinch or in sprinkles or doses. So the ability just to be able to have some of that off-ball shooting, some of that off-ball relocation, some of that cutting and movement, and be able to play in a smaller role, which I think he will be at the NBA level. Seeing some of that, I think, is very positive and speaks, and just speaks to where I see him as a prospect and why I do like him in the late lottery. Giving a little bit of a sneak peek there. All right, that's pretty much my offensive notes. Although, last thing on his shooting motion, mentioned earlier, it's very inconsistent, and he can be off balance between his movement shooting, his off dribble, which that's again adds to the idea that he's probably not going to be this elite knockdown shooter. But if the shot goes in enough, I do ignore some of the mechanics of his shot. It's not a pretty shot. It is far from textbook. But if it goes in well enough, I frankly don't care, and I think it's going to go in well enough where we won't care about it too much. Okay, we talked about the offense of Devin Carter, but now we have to get into the defense, which is really the calling card, and I think that's what NBA teams are going to be looking at when drafting him ultimately. He has really quick active feet on defense, and he resets himself positionally really well with ease, just making sure his feet are in the right spot, he's getting his angles right, and he's squaring up to the man that he's guarding really well. And I just love seeing that. I think that's something that just cleanly translates to the NBA level. And he has really active hands as well. A good sense of when to try and disrupt passing lanes or just get his hands up for the contest. Basically where to put those arms and just good reaction times just to consistently be a pest. Again, really reminds you, or really reminds me at least, of some of those, you know, Heat culture role players that just pop up and seem like, oh, wait, they actually are doing, they're really annoying. No one wants to play against them. That's what I'm seeing in Devin Carter. Give some numbers on his defensive rates. 2.9% steal rate, very good. Also, a 1.6 block rate, which is not horrible for a guard, especially of his size. Putting some raw numbers on that, that's 2.2 steals and 1.2 blocks per 75 possessions. Hey, those are both numbers I like for fantasy, and what I like to see out of defensive playmakers. I thought he stays defending guards laterally quite well, and I think he defends really well with his chest, and just staying stout, staying strong in his stats, in his defensive stance, and really helping just the wall off drives. I think we saw some of that from, you know, Cason Wallace, Marcus Smart, some of these, you know, other, I guess, strong barrel-chested guards. And I see that in Devin Carter, too. Really like what I see with that. In terms of off-ball, he's really solid in bursting and jumping passing lanes, and that wingspan really shows up there, where he just kind of not even stretches those arms, but just utilizes his length really well to block off passing lanes, get those hands in there, and create events. Now, sometimes he would be a little too gambly on defense and can get a little distracted off ball. Sometimes he would lose shooters off movement actions. But that was very minor, and that was more what some of my initial notes when I watched earlier game film. And as I watched more, there was a little bit less of that. So that's more of a minor point. Again, I think you'd rather... I don't want to say rather, but I think you take the trade-off of him being gambly on defense if it leads to these sort of steal creation events. And I think most NBA teams are going to take that trade-off. He's also just a really good screen navigator. And we talked about earlier how he positions his feet really well, and those feet are really quick and active. And he's able to slither by screens really well and utilize that capability. And I love that lateral mobility that I see from him there. Let's get a little into his rebounding here, because that's also what is very intriguing from a fantasy perspective especially. Mentioned his length earlier, and that does show up in how he gets up for boards and allows him to go up and attack the glass. He had a 23.7 defensive rebound rate. Again, 23.7 as a smaller guard. That is quite impressive. That is 10.8 boards per 75 possessions. You hear that number, and you hear a guard with those boards? Oh, that is a nice number there. And that allows him to kind of just get up and go in transition. He does look to run hard in transition, and again, I love players who do that. That's just nice, easy points or easy event opportunities, so I love that he does that. Mentioned his lack of poor decisions earlier and how I just like that he does that, or rather that I like that he doesn't make poor decisions too often. And he had a turnover rate of a little over 14%, which is pretty solid considering the usage he had. His usage was about 28% his junior year, which, hey, yeah, that's good. 14% turnover rate is not that bad for that role. And then lastly, just on some of his cons. We talked about his age, and he's an older prospect, and that meant that, hey, you know what? He should be doing well at the college level. So some of these, you know, maybe not necessarily the footwork or lateral mobility, but just being strong on defense, we'll see how well that translates. I definitely think it should. A little part of my mind says maybe I'm overstating that impact a little bit. Again, I don't think I am, but, you know, he should be doing well at the college level. He's going to be 22 at draft time, played most of his junior year at 21 as a third-year college player. He should be doing good if he's going to be drafted high. And again, just remarking on his height a little bit, you know, a little over 6'2", that's going to limit him somewhat. He already plays below the rim athletically for the most part. Not many signs of him going up for dunks or attacking bigs, you know, at their level. So that's a little bit of his limitations there. And yes, he is ultimately going to be a little undersized at the NBA level. But again, I think he, with that wingspan, he can compete hard enough and fight well enough. And, you know, I threw out some earlier names like Marcus Smart or Drew Holiday, or even you can think about Jalen Suggs. I think players like that, they compete well, and they know what to do with, even given their smaller stature. And I kind of see a little bit of that in Devin Carter. So let's get into the summary of him here. Devin Carter, for me, is an intriguing connective piece for almost every NBA roster. While his scoring and self-created game is unlikely to translate just due to that lack of dynamism or second moves, I think he has a lot of secondary skills that should make an impact pretty early on. His pesky, aggravating defensive style should be a weapon, with both his ability to frustrate at the point of attack defense on primary offensive ball handlers and his knack for jumping passing lanes. His shooting, we touched a lot on it. It may be streaky, and it may not be fully reliable based on his full college sample, but I think he should at least be a respectable piece out there and someone you need to at least pay attention to, which being at that level provides a lot for NBA offenses. And so that whole package for me gives Devin Carter some good high-level rotation upside, but a rather limited ceiling as a starter. So I think he can see a good-sized role. It's just I think how good his defense is and how streaky his shooting is will ultimately dictate just how many minutes he sees as he progresses in the NBA. So getting into some of the fantasy stats here and his skill set. Didn't mention his scoring yet. His actual points per game, rather. He had 24.5 points per 75 possessions, again, on 28% usage. I think his role is going to scale down, so I actually expect he'll probably be below average in points, even though that scoring does sound pretty impressive. I think his role is just not going to be that at the NBA level. His boards will probably be average to above average. That's more considering his role and his minutes and the position he plays, where I don't necessarily think he'll see enough minutes to, you know, capitalize on that rebounding rate we saw. But if you factor in his minutes, I think his rebounds will be good for his minutes and especially for his position as a guard. Steals are likely to be his best category. As we mentioned earlier, great steal rate, and that's really his calling card is his defense. And I think he'll give you some blocks here and there. Nothing spectacular, but it's not going to be, you know, like Anthony Simons nothing level. With his passing, again, assists will be there some, but I don't think there'll be a focal point of his stat set just based on that usage taking a hit and him playing more of that connector piece on offense. I do worry that he might be a negative in terms of the efficiency stats. We talked about how he's not a great interior finisher, and he might be taking a good volume of threes at the NBA level. So I think that field goal percentage is likely to be on the negative side. And I think the same with the three-throw percentage, just based on that full college sample. The threes will be there, but I think they'll be inconsistent. Probably be in that more middling range, maybe 1.5 to 2.5 per game, something like that. So probably around NBA baseline level of threes. And turnovers will be there, but probably not a huge issue, especially considering the role I'm expecting him to have. So for me, this makes Devin Carter just a very nice do a little bit of everything player, which are very valuable for dynasty rosters. I don't see necessarily this guy high upside, and I don't think you definitely should not be drafting Devin Carter with that in mind. But if you are looking for a player just to give you some stats here and there, and looking for a player who is likely to stick around in the NBA at a long time with a solid role, I definitely think Devin Carter can give you that, and can be a little bit of that steal specialist with some other stats chipped in to make him better than just a specialist in that regard. So Devin Carter, I'm a big fan of his on-court impact, and I'm also a pretty decent-sized fan of what he can provide for fantasy dynasty rosters as well.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
The next player we're going to get into is Kyle Filipowski, sophomore out of Duke. He'll be about 20 and a half entering the draft, and he's more of a tweener pick. I'll get into why I'm calling him a tweener pick later. But first off, we'll start with his measurements. He's about 6'11", again, without shoes, pretty tall, but has a slightly negative wingspan. It's about 6'10". And he's 230 pounds, so he's pretty nicely sized, even factoring that negative wingspan. I mean, yes, negative wingspan's not great, but you're still 6'11", 6'10". You're still occupying a lot of space on the NBA court. And let's talk about his offensive game here first, as we normally do with these prospects. I think he has pretty good handles, pretty good just touch feel at his size. And he has, I mean, it really shows in his ability to put the ball on the ground and attack a closeout. And it pairs well with some of his shooting touch as well. Getting some of his scoring numbers up front here, he averaged 24 points per 75 possessions at a little under 28% usage, which is pretty good considering that he's, again, 6'11", more of that tweener big style. Really nice. His post-up game, he has pretty decent control in the post. He keeps his head up on a swivel when backing down. He's definitely, maybe not looking for backdoor cuts, but he's definitely looking for shooters out of the wing. Definitely showed an ability to make that cross-court pass if doubles were coming, or if, you know, the opposite corner was open, or corner or wing, rather. And his turnover percentage was, it was a little high his freshman year, but his sophomore year, he decreased it down to a shade under 13%, which is very solid. Talking about his post-scoring game, I didn't really love it. I don't think he should be posting up too often at the NBA level, honestly. I thought he was rarely able to bully post defenders, even given that size that we talked about earlier, and was a little overly reliant on a spin move to create a good post look in post-up situations. Now, he did get good separation when he was able to spin and just kind of create that space there, but if that wasn't the case, he kind of resorted to more fadeaways, which they were hit or miss, but I think with some of that negative wingspan and just NBA centers or big men that might be guarding him, those turnarounds are going to be harder to hit more often than not. I really was impressed by Filipowski's passing, though, and I thought he was a really tidy passer with good court vision. We already mentioned some of his cross-court passing, but we saw also a lot of dribble handoff actions, some high post passing the cutters along the baselines, and just general reads here and there. It honestly reminded me of kind of a Sabonis light package in terms of the passing actions he was put in and a lot of high post actions. But I think what I really liked was just his fluidity in terms of dribbling the ball, being able to run these dribble handoffs, and being able to change up some of the angles on the passing. And again, I like players that bring a lot of basketball skills to the court. And I think Filipowski does that. He had an assist percentage of 18.5 last year, pretty solid, and averaged 4.0 assists per 75 possessions. Again, that's a pretty solid number there. And I think what really impressed me more than just the raw numbers was his ability to keep the ball moving in the flow of the offense, which I think is a really underrated skill to make decisions quickly and process on the court. It's something that's not going to show up in stats, but watching the film, I think he really showed that. So thinking of a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder, who really thrive on their players having good feel and extending advantages created, you know, whether it be Shea or Jalen Williams, Kyle Filipowski can be a player who just keeps extending advantages or creating new ones, which I think is just a great NBA skill to have. Talking about his shooting here, because that's also some of his appeal, is being this more floor-spacing, big-body player. He has a good catch-and-shoot ability. I'm not going to say great, but it's definitely smooth, tidy shot motion, fairly decent release time, and definitely shows itself best in pick-and-pop scenarios from the pick-and-roll. Decent volume at 4.6 three-point attempts per 75 possessions, hitting them at a 35% clip. That's about 1.6 makes per 75 possessions. No, he's definitely not a bomber per three, but I think pairing his shooting with his ability to attack closeouts, maybe that's why we actually saw that volume not sky high, because teams obviously knew the scouting report and respected a shot from deep, but him knowing that, he would be able to put the ball on the ground and then attack the rim if they close out too hard on him. And he does have decent burst for his size and decent just go at the basket ability with a fairly tidy handle. So could he, I mean, it could depend on the game, right? If teams aren't respecting his shot, he's going to put it up. He's going to put up threes. If teams are really closing out on him hard, okay, then he's going to attack the basket. So I like, again, that he can do both of those things. He's not just a standstill catch and shoot shooter. He will take advantage of the advantage created for him. And finishing out his offense here, I thought he was a pretty quick cutter and decisive cutter, which allows for some easy looks at the rim. Love seeing that. His two-point finishing was about 56%. So I think some of that was... He's not... We'll get into some of his finishing in a second, but I think he's not necessarily as much of a vertical threat. And his downhill finishing can be a little iffy, and I'm not sure of his roll threat in the pick-and-roll game. You know, 56% two-point field goal percentage, that's good, but it's not great. And I think that's a little bit to his lack of vertical pop in his game. He's not really able to sky at the rim too often. And, you know, it's not bad. He's 6'10". But in terms of just getting up there and be able to get the easiest looks at the rim, I don't know if that's there. He can get easy looks at the rim, but maybe not the best looks or create. I'm trying to think best of the phrases. I don't think he makes the most out of what I would just say are easy looks at the rim, but he still makes them at a pretty good rate. Let's talk about defense now with Kyle Filipowski, because I think that's where NBA teams are going to have the most question marks and what could keep his defense, or what could keep his minutes down at the NBA level for sure. Now, he does generally have a good head on defense, and I think he's generally aware of offensive actions being run. That shows up, I think, in some of his steal rate, where he does have decently active hands. He averaged 1.6 steals per 75 possessions for a 2.2% steal rate, which is pretty good for a big. And I actually thought he was adequate at protecting the rim if it was kind of a one-on-one situation where he knew someone was going to attack him. I thought his rim contest fundamentals in terms of being vertical, not fouling too much, were pretty solid. And he actually upped his block rate from his sophomore year to 5.3%. That's good for 2.2 blocks per 75 possessions. So both the steal and block numbers are actually pretty good. For fantasy, we love hearing that. But now we're getting to some of the negatives of his defense. And this is where NBA teams are going to maybe struggle with taking him with a high selection or playing him a starter level amount of minutes. Again, I mentioned earlier, he doesn't have much vertical pop to his game. And that does show up defensively in that he's not really able to sky up for contests. It's more a good positional contest. Talking about his game in the pick and roll, no, there's something that's sometimes called the cat and mouse game when bigs play in drop coverage, where you want to make sure you're tagging the roll man well enough to be able to guard him for the lob at the rim, but you're also close enough to the guard where you can take away their floaters or their mid-range shots and allow the guard who got screened time to recover. And he just didn't play that cat-mouse game very well, in my opinion. He was often kind of caught in the middle and wasn't really taking away either potentially a lob threat or the guard drive well enough. And was kind of caught in that no-man's land where, well, you're not really defending either of those actions well enough. And as I just said, he played mainly in a drop coverage. He did sometimes show and recover where you quickly block off that initial drive from the guard and then recover back to your man. But he just didn't have enough mobility to play up to the level. And I don't think NBA teams are going to want him switching out on the perimeter too often. He was pretty poor out there and guarding in space, just kind of due to his slower reactions, his slower footwork and lateral mobility, and his general defensive mobility and fluidity just wasn't at the level that you want for someone guarding out on the perimeter. In addition, talking about some of his defensive footwork, I thought his footwork and placement weren't always precise, which when you pair that with his lack of upper end mobility and fluidity and athleticism, you know, if he's already out of place, he's not giving himself any favors there. And I think that would need to improve for him to just give himself a chance to make the right play. I also thought he struggled a lot making the, I'll call it second rotation, where maybe he might rotate over well for that first one-on-one contest when someone's driving, but he was very slow to recover and make the next rotation. So if someone's driving at him at the rim, maybe they dump it off because, okay, he did a good job contesting the initial play. He wasn't recovering that well. And to be fair to Filipowski, that's something that's hard to do, right? That's really something only the elite players do that can guard both actions or take away both of those. But I just didn't see him do that even at a adequate level or a well level. And that really does minimize the amount of rim returns he'll have at the NBA level. In addition, we talked about that negative wingspan, and yes, he does have good size. Definitely good size. Great size, really, at 6'11". But he's probably a smidge undersized to play solo big all the time, or even maybe as his primary position. I think he can get a little bullied in the post, and players will be able to shoot over him. Granted, that's probably only an issue if you're playing a dominant post player like, you know, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic. You are not playing those players every night, and that can sometimes be overstated, the lack of a post-defensive game. But I think it's a little bit there, and it's not something I love. I also thought Filipowski could sometimes resort to some ticky-tacky fouling here or there. His foul rates were adequate, not too bad, but I think he resorted to some of these fouls because he was undersized or because he wasn't positioned well, and that could be a bit of an issue at the NBA level. Now, lastly, I do want to touch on Filipowski's rebounds and screen setting, because I forgot to mention that with the offensive side. I thought his boxing out fundamentals were actually really strong and did a good job of putting a body on a main man and allowing himself the space to then attack the glass. I think he's going to help a team rebound on the court very positively. He had a 23.7 defensive rebound percentage over his first two seasons at Duke, and that's about 12 overall boards per 75 possessions. Both very strong metrics, and I think that should be a tool for him at the NBA level. Even though, you know, I mentioned earlier, maybe he's a smidge undersized, it doesn't really show up in the rebounding numbers too much or in the film, so I like seeing that from Kyle Filipowski. And I also thought he was a pretty mobile and active screener. It may be weird to call someone setting screens mobile, but I thought he was able to kind of quickly shift where that screen angle was coming from, and, you know, could either reset the screen or do a double screen. And I thought he was very active there and very aware, and sets decent bodies on defenders. You know, that's something we don't hear a lot of talk about often, is how good of a screener a big is, but it definitely shows up. As someone who watched Christian Wood for a couple seasons on the Rockets, that man did not know how to set a screen, and I was so frustrated by just how poor he was at it. He never put a body on a man. His screens were just completely pointless, never created any advantage, and was just horrible. Compared to watching someone like Steven Adams or Rudy Gobert in the playoffs, and you see them set monster screens, it is night and day. And I'm not saying Filipowski's at that level of screening, but I think he is a solid screener and knows the importance of getting a body on a man to allow the guard to get that extra advantage. So I did like that, I guess, more connective part of his offensive game.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So getting into a summary of Kyle Filipowski, he may have some athletic limitations, but that doesn't mean he can't contribute to an NBA rotation positively. His passing, shooting, and general skill ability should add value to modern offensive systems that emphasize free-flowing basketball and the value of attacking spaces generated. This versatility that Filipowski possesses in terms of his skill set should translate to numerous systems and should be a tool and an asset for NBA offenses. Defensively, Filipowski can best be described as survivable for me. I think he is going to struggle in typical big man defensive responsibilities, but I think he can be enough of a general deterrent with his size to do some positive things out there, as mentioned with his steal and block rates and active hands, and just also his defensive rebounding. Overall, this may make Filipowski a bit of an awkward fit if you're slotting him into traditional positional roles, but just purely as a basketball player, I think he has some very solid outcomes as a rotation player with maybe some fringe starter upside, and I think that does bode well enough for his minutes at the NBA level. Maybe not starter level, but solid rotation player, someone in that Naz Reid mold where sometimes starter, usually backup 4 or 5 big man, that's sort of the role I see for him. And the minutes I see for him at the NBA level. Getting to how this will affect him for fantasy, his points I think will be middling, maybe below average just based on the amount of minutes he sees, and chipping in some threes here and there. For his efficiency, I think he'll should be decent to solid for field goal percentage, with okay free throw percentage. He did shoot 72% over his college career, which, I mean, for a big is fine. You like to see a little bit more touch there, but it's not too damaging. With his rebounding, mentioned earlier, I think we'll see good boards for him, just with his size and where he will be playing on defense and schemes, I think we'll see some good boards out of him. He'll add some assists, and he'll have some turnovers, but I don't think anything worrisome. He's not going to have that level of usage, but we could see the assists tick up a little bit. Maybe in that 3 range, 3.5, maybe a little optimistic based on his role and anticipated minutes, but I do like his ability to chip in some there. We'll see some defensive stat potential with blocks and steals just with his size and his hands and the way he does anticipate some offensive actions. I think we'll see him chip in blocks and steals. Probably not too great just based on those athletic limitations, but we'll see some. So I think for all this said, this makes Kyle Filipowski a good jack-of-all-trades stat fantasy contributor. Even if those minutes aren't there of a starter, I think he'll be able to contribute and help your dynasty squad in a number of ways. Similar to Devin Carter, as we mentioned earlier, though, there's probably not a huge upside here unless he does see starter-level minutes and it's at that level. But I think there's a pretty safe floor here picking him in your fantasy drafts for Kyle Filipowski. That will do it for this episode of the Pun Intended podcast. So we're getting kind of to that mid-lottery, fringe lottery range right now. I think we've detailed 14, 15 prospects. We did multiple prospects on the European prospects, so we've gone through a lot. And that's what we're gonna keep doing up till draft day. In terms of the writing side, over at Sports Ethos, we'll be working on our draft profiles, so be on the lookout for that. And that's going to detail all the prospects we discuss here and much, much more. That being said, enjoy the week off for the NBA Finals and get into prospect scouting.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.